Many of the circumstances we encounter in life are completely out of our control. But Skip Heitzik says there is one very important exception to that.
The first four experiences of Abram's early years were largely out of his control. You don't control the death of your brother. You don't control the fact that your wife can't have kids. You don't control what values or religion were passed down to you by your parents. You don't control the fact that Dad says we're moving to Haran. But this last one you can control. How do you respond? How do you react to things that go on in your life?
Make the connection at the foot of the cross. Study the Word of God and find the way into His love. And take the time to read, for Jesus told.
Sometimes we can take optimism a little too far, like when someone drinks coffee, which they hate, just because it'll make the tea they'll have later taste better. Weird, right? Well, we don't need to be that extreme. However, God does want us to use the dark, painful moments of our past to create something better for us in the future. And Skip Heitzik will tell us how today here on The Connection. But before we begin, maybe you felt like truly understanding the book of Revelation was beyond your ability. But with Skip's latest book, you'll discover that simply isn't true.
When it comes to reading and studying the book of Revelation, here's the typical response.
Oh no, not the book of Revelation. You gotta stay out of that book. That's one of those closed books. That's for the theologians.
However, people often react that way to the final book of the Bible because they don't know what it's really about. So what is Revelation about?
It's not a bunch of analogies or a bunch of predictions of the future. Primarily, it is a singular revelation of a person, Jesus Christ. He's the center stage character in this book. He's the main subject.
If you want to know Jesus, you need to get to know Him in the book of Revelation. Skip Heitzik wants to help you do that with his latest book, You Can Understand the Book of Revelation. Get your copy today for just $12 when you call 1-800-922-1888 or when you visit connectionradio.org.
Abraham was told of a glorious future that God had in store for him, but initially he lacked the faith to act on that promise. Fact is, we can be just like him sometimes, only going halfway and following God because our past keeps holding us back. How do we change that? Stick around to find out right here on The Connection.
And make the connection.
Turn once again to Genesis chapter 11, and as you find your spot, we'll join Skip Heitzik as he continues with his first study in our new series, Making Your Mark.
Listen to what she said. As soon as she found out she was pregnant, she said, "For the Lord has surely looked on my affliction." That's what infertility was called back then, an affliction. When Rachel, his other wife, Leah's younger sister, found out that she was pregnant, she goes up to her husband, grabs him, and says, "Give me children or I die." That's a lot to put on a guy. She did it. Even the rabbis later on said seven people are excommunicated from the presence of God. First on the list, a Jew who has no wife. Second on the list, a Jew who has a wife but has no child. That's the belief system that came with this. It was a heavy burden to bear. Now, we know the rest of the story. We've read about Abraham before. And so you know that this infertility was simply a setup for a great miracle that will come later on when miraculously she conceives and has Isaac. But in the meantime, they don't know that. In the meantime, as a part of what shaped his past, he's living with the death of a brother, which means the adoption of his nephew Lot, because he's going to bring him with him. The disappointment of having an infertile wife. And just think of Sarah growing up. You know, she grew up maybe playing with primitive dolls, imagining what it was like to be a wife, have a home, cook, cuddle the little doll as a mama. And then they got engaged, her and Abram. And I bet they had conversations, don't you think? Like, well, how many kids do you want to have? Especially difficult for Abram because his name, Abram, means exalted father. You would be the laughingstock of the village. Villages everywhere you went. What's your name? Exalted father. How many kids you got? None. He would refrain. I know that I'm talking to some people who are painfully relating to this. This is a part of your past. It's a part of your present. You're unable to conceive. You've been to doctors. You've been prayed for. You've been anointed with oil numerous times. You'd take a bath in oil if it would work. But it's painful for you every time there's a baby dedication or a Mother's Day. It's tough for you to be there. It's an expectation you wanted. It has broken your heart. It is an unfulfilled one. Infertility affects 6.1 million in the United States. 10% of the reproductive population is affected by this, or 16 out of 100 couples, which means right now in a crowd this size, hundreds of people sitting around you are somehow affected by it. For others, it's not this. It's not infertility. It might be another disappointment, another expectation that is unfulfilled. Maybe your past includes, up to the present, you've waited for a wife. You expected you'd be married by now, and you're not. Maybe you expected to be healed from a disease by now, and you're not. Maybe by now you thought you'd get that raise at work, and they didn't give it to you. In fact, they lowered your wage. Others of you thought the court settlement will be ruled in my favor, and it's not turned out that way. So you have a pain, a disappointment that forms who you are, and you bring it to this very moment. I'm sharing all this with you because those are very real things. They were real in his life. They can become for you a place that you park your life. You look back to the past. It becomes a hitching post rather than a guide post. You go back to that and you relive it and you relive it and you'll not let it go. And you won't grow till you do. Let's move on. There's a fourth experience, and that is displacement. Displacement. Verse 31, Terah, notice how it's worded, took his son Abram and grandson Lot, son of Haran, and daughter-in-law Sarai, son Abraham's wife, and they went out with them from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to the land of Canaan, and they came to Haran and dwelt there. I know we just read that and we look at it as a matter of fact without reading behind that the emotion. If it wasn't bad enough to have a death, a disappointment of infertility, now there is the displacement of everything Abram knew growing up. The hometown, the friends, some relatives, and dad gets up and moves, and the whole family moves with him. I bet by now some of you have heard of the work of Dr. Thomas Holmes, who has done a study on stress. And he comes up with stress points or stress factors. And he assigns certain life experience, based on his study, a certain value in this stress indicator test, indicating if you're close to an incident, he calls it, a stress-related incident. It could be a nervous breakdown. He figures that if you've had 200 to 300 of these points in the last year or so, you are you're in tough shape, put it that way. You're in tough shape. Let me give you a sampling, especially as it pertains to Abram. This doctor supposes that the death of a close family member would yield 63 stress factor points. Abram has two deaths in a period of a few years, if I'm reading the text correctly. Major personal injury or illness, 53 points. Marriage, 50 points. You see, you can have good stress as well as bad stress. It's still stressful. Change in the health of a family member, think of Sarai now, 44 points. Change in residence, 20 points. In fact, he even says Christmas yields 12 stress points. I'm not surprised. I would think more even. Now, if I counted correctly, that's about 303 points for Abram, excluding Christmas, for obvious reasons. The Census Bureau of the United States of America reveals that 36 million Americans, 20% of the population, moves every year. There's a huge shifting, more than any other time in our history, a huge shifting of population. The average American, according to the census report, the average American moves 11 times in their lifetime, 11 times. If you're in the military, this is a style of living for you. You've moved all over the place. But add all of that together now in his past, the move, the disappointment, can't have kids, the death, and no spiritual resources really to cope with that growing up. Now there's a final one, and we're going to close with this, a fifth experience, and that is disobedience. And I'm going to explain, but let me say this. The first four experiences of Abram's early years were largely out of his control. You don't control the death of your brother. You don't control the fact that your wife can't have kids. You don't control what values or religion were passed down to you by your parents. You don't control the fact that dad says we're moving to Haran. But this last one you can control. How do you respond? How do you react to things that go on in your life? Now, I'm going to take you back to verse 31. I'm going to read all the way down to chapter 12, verse 1, and I want you to follow me carefully. Terah took his son, Abram. Notice how it's worded. It's not that Abram went out because God told him to do so. He's leading. Terah took his son Abram and his grandson Lot, the son of Haran, his daughter-in-law Sarai, his son, and all these other people, and they came to Haran and dwelt there. Notice that the name of the place is the name of his son who had died. So the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Now, the Lord had said, not said at this point, but had said to Abram, get out of your country, from your family, from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. Now, we're going to read more of that next week. Notice, though, that Terah takes his family and moves. He's moving across the Euphrates River. He wants to skip that large basin of desert between there and Canaan. That's where God told Abram to go. And he's making his way westward along the river, and he stops at Haran. Why does he stop there? Well, it's interesting. If you look at the genealogical records of Terah, the father of Abram, you notice something. There's a lot of names in his ancestors' genealogy that have the same names of this area around Assyria or Haran where he stops. Because of that, most historians have traced Terah's roots back to Haran. That's probably where he was born. And later on, they say there was an exodus of a lot of people who lived in this region, and they went 600 miles east to Ur of the Chaldees, which means this is where Terah grew up, spent his youth. He goes there and he stops right there. But if you notice again in chapter 12, verse 1, now the Lord had said to Abram, get out of your country. Well, he did that. From your family. He didn't do that. And from your father's house. He didn't do that. To a land I will show you. He didn't do that. He stopped in Haran. The land God had for him was Canaan. In fact, he really doesn't obey until verse 4. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. So he has been in Haran for a while, or if maybe it's pronounced Haran, however you want to say it. Would you keep a marker here and turn to the New Testament? I'm going to clear something up. I'm going to piece it all together for you. Chapter 7, the book of Acts. A young rabbi named Stephen is speaking in front of a court, the Sanhedrin. What he says in court has to be said and crafted very carefully, and he does. And you'll get the understanding of what I just read in Genesis in the New Testament. Acts chapter 7. Then the high priest said, "Are these things so?" And he, Stephen, said, "Brethren and fathers, listen." And let me just say to you right now, listen. The God of glory, interesting designation for God, very unique. The God of glory appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia before he dwelt in Haran. And said, "Get out of your country and from your relatives and come to a land that I will show you." Then he came out of the land of the Chaldeans and dwelt in Haran. And from there, when his father was dead, he moved him to this land in which you now dwell. Let me piece it all together for you. God first appeared gloriously, no doubt, in some glorious vision or apparition to Abram when he was living in Ur of the Chaldees. Leave this place. Leave your family. There's a new start and a new land. Well, he didn't do that. Rather, he probably told his dad about it. His dad was shaken up over his son's death, and they decided to leave but go to where he grew up. And Abram stayed there till his dad died. So Abram had enough faith. He believed God at the beginning, enough to start out. But his faith is still weak. It's a little faltering. He's learning. God just revealed himself to him. He's not a mature believer. He's barely a believer. He just believed and he went, but he stopped halfway there. Now, God said, leave your country, leave your family, go to a new place. He did one of those things, but he neglected to fulfill the rest. He took Terah, his dad, and Lot. By the way, just as an aside, may mean something, may not. Did you know the name Terah? You know what it means? Delay. Boy, talk about a guy fulfilling his destiny or his name. It means delay. And this dad, bless his heart, delayed his son Abram in God's obedient calling at least 5, some scholars say 15 years. Delay. I'm not denying that Abram had it tough. He had a tough past. He had no spiritual resources. He had the death of a brother that shaped him. Hardship shaped him. He had the disappointment of an infertile wife. He had the dislocation of being put in a different place, but not where God wanted him. And all of that is true. He was a fledgling believer. He wasn't mature yet. But he didn't obey. And here's my point. Your past can become a weight. You can hold on to something so dearly, it becomes a weight instead of a wing, a hitching post instead of a guidepost. Whatever you bring with you from your old life into your new life can create problems. He brought Terah, and Terah delayed him. He brought Lot, and if you know the story, Lot created all sorts of problems till they finally parted. Now, if you're taking notes tonight, I want to close by giving you two, let's call them life lessons from the life of Abram, his early life. Number one, the past has shaped you, no doubt, but don't let it stifle you. The past has shaped you, don't let it stifle you. You have a past. All of you, all of us, we have a wagon load of baggage that shaped who we are, where we were raised, who raised us, what values were given to us, pain, joys, all sorts of stuff that form our little baggage that we enter into the Christian life with. Learn to face that, but don't let it stop you from fulfilling God's plan or God's will for your life. You know, a lot of people hide behind the past. Well, I am this way because when I was young, and you could fill in the blank. I am this way because I'm Irish, or I'm German, or I'm Latino, or whatever it might be that you use as your little excuse. I'm saying, use your past as a springboard, not as a sofa. Let it be a teacher, not an undertaker. Remember that Paul said, all that was past for me, I have learned to count as loss, and I look ahead, he said, for the prize. Forgetting the things which are behind, I look forward to the things which are ahead. Even your failures, let them go. Even the greats, even the heroes like Abram, failed and started out sometimes in failure. The first time you tried to walk, you fell. Even though your parents looked at you and thought you were Olympic material, you fell. The first time you tried to swim, you almost drowned. First time you tried to hit a ball, you probably didn't. The first time you got a report card, you didn't get straight A's. And if you did, nobody liked you in the whole school. My point is, that's life. We're not perfect. We don't start out that way. We're learning things. Here, isn't it great? Isn't it great to read about Abram, that he wasn't perfect right out of the start, right out of the gates? In 1831, a man failed in his business. Didn't work. Lost money. Quit. The next year, in 1832, he was defeated for his legislature. He was elected to it, however, in 1834, 2 years later. His girlfriend died the next year, 1835. This man had a nervous breakdown the following year. He was defeated for Speaker of the House in 1838, defeated for Elector in 1840, defeated for Congress in 43, but elected to Congress in 46, but defeated again for Congress in 48, and defeated for Senate in 1850. He ran for vice president and was defeated in 1856 and for the Senate in 58. That's a lot of defeated, 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 fail, fail, fail. But this man, Abraham Lincoln, was eventually elected to the presidency of the United States of America. Here's my point. Abram had a past, and some of it was failure, death, disappointment, displacement, disobedience. But he went on to make his mark. He went on to make his mark. The past has shaped you. Don't let it stifle you. Number two, and finally, we'll close. Disobedience postpones influence. Listen carefully to that. Disobedience postpones influence. Oh yeah, Abram made a mark, no doubt. We're going to read about that. But he could have gotten a head start, at least 5 or 15 years, without the delay. It was his disobedience that postponed his influence. He wasted some time, didn't he? He wasted some time. Ben Franklin had a little quip. He used to say, for the want of a nail, or for the lack of a nail, the shoe is lost, the horseshoe. For the loss of a shoe, the horse is lost. For the loss of a horse, the rider is lost. And I would say, for the want or the lack or the loss of obedience, your influence is lost. So, tonight, would you decide to take, based on these two things, two steps, two things that you need to do? Number one, look back on your past. Just in your quiet time this week, in your spare time, go over some of the monumental things of your past that shaped who you are. Face that. Deal with that. That's who I am. But based upon that, number two, set priorities for your future. Because the truth is, you cannot turn back the clock. You can't go back. You can't turn back the clock, but God can wind it up again. God can wind it up again. Right now, right here where you're at, no matter what age, you can make a mark on your culture.
Well, I hope you'll take Skip's advice on how to handle past issues. After all, if we want to go forward with God, we have to learn to let go of what's behind us. Try it, and I think you'll find that God can make a bright future no matter how dark your past may be. And so that brings us to the close of our first message in this new series, Making Your Mark. But if you want to listen to more teachings from Skip, we have a whole online library for you to explore. You can browse through over 1,200 teachings from Pastor Skip on a wide variety of topics when you visit our website at connectionradio.org/library. Now, whether it's a past series you missed or a specific study you want to share with someone else, you'll find plenty to look through at our online library. Or if you'd like a copy of today's teaching, we can easily provide that as well. For just $6, we'll send you a copy on CD, and all you need to do is call us at 1-800-922-1888 or visit connectionradio.org. We also enjoy getting your letters. And if you have a little extra time to do so, write us at P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199.
And make the connection.
Christian life can be one of the most exciting adventures we'll ever experience, and we'll discover how when we continue our new series next time. The Connection is a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.